How does your garden grow? Hercule Poirot arranged his letters in a neat pile in front of him. He picked up the topmost letter, studied the address for a moment, then neatly slit the back of the envelope with a little paper knife that he kept on the breakfast table for that express purpose, and extracted the contents. The letter was headed, Private and Confidential. On the right-hand side was the address, Rosebank, Charman's Green, Bucks, and the date, March the 21st. Dear Monsieur Poirot, I have been recommended to you by an old and valued friend of mine who knows the worry and distress I have been in lately. Not that this friend knows the actual circumstances. Those I have kept entirely to myself, the matter being strictly private. My friend assures me that you are discretion itself, and that there will be no fear of my being involved in a police matter which, if my suspicions should prove correct, I should very much dislike. But it is, of course, possible that I am entirely mistaken. I do not feel myself clear-headed enough nowadays, suffering as I do from insomnia and the result of a severe illness last winter, to investigate things for myself. I have neither the means nor the ability. On the other hand, I must reiterate once more that this is a very delicate family matter, and that for many reasons I may want the whole thing hushed up. If I am once assured of the facts, I can deal with the matter myself and should prefer to do so. I hope that I have made myself clear on this point. If you will undertake this investigation, perhaps you will let me know to the above address. Yours very truly, Amelia Barraby. Poirot read the letter through twice. Again, his eyebrows rose slightly. Then he placed it on one side and proceeded to the next envelope in the pile. At 10 o'clock precisely, he entered the room where Miss Lemon, his confidential secretary, sat awaiting her instructions for the day. Miss Lemon was 48 and of unprepossessing appearance. Her general effect was that of a lot of bones flung together at random. She had a passion for order, and almost equalling that of Poirot himself, and though capable of thinking, she never thought unless told to do so. Poirot handed her Amelia Barraby's letter. "Tell her I will do myself the honour to call upon her at any time she suggests, unless she prefers to consult me here. Do not type the letter, write it by hand." "Yes, Monsieur Poirot." Poirot produced more correspondence. "These are my bills." Miss Lemon's efficient hands sorted them quickly. "I'll pay all but these two." "Why those two? There is no error in them." "Though they're firms you've only just begun to deal with. It looks bad to pay too promptly when you've just opened an account. Looks as though you were working up to get some credit later on."
"Ah," murmured Poirot, "I bow to your superior knowledge of the British tradesman."
"Yes, well, there's nothing much I don't know about them," said Miss Lemon grimly. The letter to Miss Amelia Barraby was duly written and sent, but no reply was forthcoming. Perhaps, thought Hercule Poirot, the old lady had unravelled her mystery herself. Yet he felt a shade of surprise that in that case she should not have written a courteous word to say that his services were no longer required. It was 5 days later when Miss Lemon, after receiving her morning's instructions, said,
"That Miss Barraby we wrote to, no wonder there's been no answer. She's dead."
Hercule Poirot said very softly,
"Ah, dead."
It sounded not so much like a question as an answer. Opening her handbag, Miss Lemon produced a newspaper cutting.
"I saw it in the tube and tore it out."
Just registering in his mind approval of the fact that, though Miss Lemon used the word tore, she had neatly cut the entry out with scissors, Poirot read the announcement taken from the births, deaths, and marriages in the Morning Post. On March the 26th, suddenly, at Rosebank, Charman's Green, Amelia Jane Barraby, in her 73rd year. No flowers by request. Poirot read it over. He murmured under his breath,
"Suddenly."
Then he said briskly, "If you'll be so obliging as to take a letter, Miss Lemon." The pencil hovered. Miss Lemon, her mind dwelling on the intricacies of the filing system, took down in rapid and correct shorthand, "Dear Miss Barraby, I have received no reply from you, but as I shall be in the neighbourhood of Charman's Green on Friday, I will call upon you that day. and discuss more fully the matter mentioned to me in your letter, yours, etc., etc.
Type this letter, please, and if it is posted at once, it should get to Chairman's Green tonight.
On the following morning, a letter in a black-edged envelope arrived by second post. Dear Sir, in reply to your letter, my aunt, Miss Barraby, passed away on the 26th. So the matter you speak of is no longer of importance. Yours truly, Mary Delafontaine. Poirot smiled to himself.
No longer of importance? Ah, that is what we shall see.
En avant, to Charman's Green.
Rosebank was a house that seemed likely to live up to its name, which is more than can be said for most houses of its class and character. Hercule Poirot paused as he walked up the path to the front door and looked approvingly at the neatly planned beds on either side of him. Rose trees that promised a good harvest later in the year, and at present daffodils, early tulips, blue hyacinths. The last bed was partly edged with shells. Poirot murmured to himself,
"How does it go? The English rhyme the children sing. Mistress Mary, quite contrary, how does your garden grow? With cockle shells and silver bells, and pretty maids all in a row."
Well, not a row, perhaps, he considered, but here is at least one pretty maid to make a little rhyme come right.
The front door had opened, and a neat little maid in cap and apron was looking somewhat dubiously at the spectacle of a heavily moustached foreign gentleman talking aloud to himself in the front garden. She was, as Poirot had noted, a very pretty little maid, with round blue eyes and rosy cheeks. Poirot raised his hat with courtesy and addressed her.
"Pardon, but does Miss Amelia Barraby live here?"
The little maid gasped, and her eyes grew rounded.
"Oh, sir, didn't you know? She's dead. Ever so sudden it was, Tuesday night."
She hesitated, divided between two strong instincts. The first, distrust of a foreigner. The second, the pleasurable enjoyment of her class in dwelling on the subject of illness and death.
"You amaze me," said Hercule Poirot, not very truthfully. "I had an appointment with the lady for today. However, I can perhaps see the other lady who lives here."
The little maid seemed slightly doubtful.
"The mistress, well, you could see her, perhaps, but I don't know whether she'll be seeing anyone or not."
"She will see me,"
said Poirot, and handed her a card. The authority of his tone had its effect. The rosy-cheeked maid fell back and ushered Poirot into a sitting-room on the right of the hall. Then, card in hand, she departed to summon her mistress. Hercule Poirot looked around him. The room was a perfectly conventional drawing-room, oatmeal-coloured paper with a frieze round the top, indeterminate cretons, rose-coloured cushions and curtains, a good many china knick-knacks and ornaments. There was nothing in the room that stood out that announced a definite personality. Suddenly, Poirot, who was very sensitive, felt eyes watching him. He wheeled round. A girl was standing in the entrance of the French window, a small, sallow girl, with very black hair and suspicious eyes. She came in, and as Poirot made a little bow, she burst out abruptly,
"Why have you come?"
Poirot did not reply. He merely raised his eyebrows.
"Why have you come? You are not a lawyer? No?"
Her English was good, but not for a minute would anyone have taken her to be English.
"Why should I be a lawyer, mademoiselle?"
The girl stared at him sullenly.
"I thought you might be. I thought you had come perhaps to say that she did not know what she was doing. I have heard of such things. Though not due influence. That is what they call it, no? But that is not right. She wanted me to have the money, and I shall have it. If it is needful, I shall have a lawyer of my own. The money is mine. She wrote it down, so, and so it shall be."
She looked ugly, her chin thrust out, her eyes gleaming. The door opened, and a tall woman entered and said,
"Katrina?"
The girl shrank, flushed, muttered something, and went out through the window. Poirot turned to face the newcomer, who had so effectually dealt with the situation by uttering a single word.
There had been authority in her voice, and contempt in a shade of well-bred irony. He realized at once that this was the owner of the house, Mary Delafontaine. "Monsieur Poirot, I wrote to you. You cannot have received my letter."
"Oh, alas, I have been away from London."
"Oh, I see. Well, that explains it. I must introduce myself. My name is Delafontaine. This is my husband. Miss Barraby was my aunt." Mr. Delafontaine had entered so quietly that his arrival had passed unnoticed. He was a tall man with grizzled hair and an indeterminate manner. He had a nervous way of fingering his chin. He often looked towards his wife, and it was plain that he expected her to take the lead in any conversation.
"I much regret that I intrude in the midst of your bereavement," said Hercule Poirot.
"I quite realize that it is not your fault," said Mrs. Delafontaine. "My aunt died on Tuesday evening. It was quite unexpected."
"Yes, most unexpected," said Mr. Delafontaine. "Great blow."
His eyes watched the window where the foreign girl had disappeared.
"I apologize," said Hercule Poirot, "and I withdraw."
He moved a step towards the door.
"Half a sec," said Mr. Delafontaine. "You, had an appointment with Aunt Amelia, you say?"
"Parfaitement."
"Oh, but perhaps you will tell us about it," said his wife. "If there's anything we can do..."
"No, it was of a private nature," said Poirot. "I am a detective," he added simply.
Mr. Delafontaine knocked over a little china figure he was handling. His wife looked puzzled.
"A detective? And you had an appointment with Auntie? But how extraordinary."
She stared at him.
"Can't you tell us a little more, Monsieur Poirot? It seems quite fantastic."
Poirot was silent for a moment. He chose his words with care.
"It is difficult for me, madame, to know what to do."
"Look here," said Mr. Delafontaine. "She didn't mention Russians, did she?"
"Russians?"
"Yes, you know, Bolshies, Reds, all that sort of thing."
"Oh, don't be absurd, Henry," said his wife.
Mr. Delafontaine collapsed.
"Oh, sorry, sorry. I just wondered."
Slowly, gravely, Hercule Poirot shook his head. He shook it with visible regret, but he shook it.
"At present, madame," he said, "I fear I must say nothing."
He bowed, picked up his hat, and moved to the door. Mary Delafontaine came with him into the hall. On the doorstep he paused and looked at her.
"You are fond of your garden, I think, madame."
"I? Oh, yes, I spend a lot of time gardening."
"Je vous fais mes compliments."
He bowed once more and strode down to the gate. As he passed out of it and turned to the right, he glanced back and registered two impressions: a sallow face watching him from a first-floor window, and a man of erect and soldierly carriage pacing up and down on the opposite side of the street. Hercule Poirot nodded to himself.
"Definitivement," he said. "There is a mouse in this hole. What move must the cat make now?"
His decision took him to the nearest post office. Here he put through a couple of telephone calls. The result seemed to be satisfactory. He bent his steps to Charman's Green Police Station, where he inquired for Inspector Sims. Inspector Sims was a big, burly man with a hearty manner.
"Monsieur Poirot?"
he inquired.
"I thought so. I've just this minute had a telephone call through from the Chief Constable about you. He said you'd be dropping in. Come into my office."
The door shut. The inspector waved Poirot to one chair, settled himself in another, and turned a gaze of acute inquiry upon his visitor.
"You're very quick on to the mark, Mr. Poirot. Come to see us about this Rosebank case almost before we know it is a case. What put you on to it?"
Poirot drew out a letter he had received and handed it to the inspector. The latter read it with some interest.
Interesting, he said. "The trouble is, it might mean so many things. Pity she couldn't have been a little more explicit. It would have helped us now."
"Or there might have been no need for help."
"You mean?"
"She might have been alive."
"You go as far as that, do you? Well, I'm not sure you're wrong."
"I pray of you, Inspector, recount to me the facts. I know nothing at all."
"Well, that's easily done. Old lady was taken bad after dinner on Tuesday night. Very alarming. Convulsions, spasms, whatnot. They sent for a doctor, and by the time he arrived, she was dead. Idea was, she had died of a fit.
Well, he didn't much like the look of things. He hemmed and hawed and put it with a bit of soft sawder, but he made it clear that he couldn't give a death certificate. And as far as the family go, that's where the matter stands. They're awaiting the result of the post-mortem. We've got a bit further. The doctor gave us the tip right away. He and the police surgeon did the autopsy together, and the result is in no doubt whatever. The old lady died of a large dose of strychnine.
Aha!
Yeah, that's right. Very nasty bit of work. Point is, who gave it to her? It must have been administered very shortly before death. First idea was, it was given to her in her food at dinner, but frankly, that seems to be a washout. They had artichoke soup served from a tureen, fish pie and apple tart. Miss Barraby, Mr. Delafontaine, and Mrs. Delafontaine. Miss Barraby had a kind of nurse attendant, a half-Russian girl, but she didn't eat with the family. She had the remains as they came out from the dining room. There's a maid, but it was her night out. She left the soup on the stove and the fish pie in the oven, and the apple tart was cold. All three of them ate the same thing, and apart from that, I don't think you could get strychnine down anyone's throat that way. Stuff's as bitter as gall. The doctor told me you could taste it in a solution of 1 in 1,000 or something like that.
She had money, the old lady?
All very well to do, I imagine. Of course, we haven't got exact details yet. The Delafontaines are pretty badly off from what I can make out. The old lady helped with the upkeep of the house. Poirot smiled a little. He said,
So you suspect the Delafontaines? Which of them?
Well, I don't exactly say I suspect either of them in particular. But there it is. They're her only near relatives, and her death brings them a tidy sum of money, I've no doubt. We all know what human nature is.
Sometimes inhuman. Yes, that is very true.
And there was nothing else the old lady ate or drank?
Well, as a matter of fact... Ah, voilà, I felt that you had something, as you say, up your sleeve. The soup, the fish pie, the apple tart, a bêtise. Now we come to the hub of the affair.
Well, I don't know about that. But as a matter of fact, the old girl took a cachet before meals. You know, not a pill or a tablet, one of those rice paper things with powder inside. Some perfectly harmless thing for the digestion.
Admirable. Nothing is easier than to fill a cachet with strychnine and substitute it for one of the others. It slips down the throat with a drink of water and is not tasted.
Yeah, that's all right. Trouble is, the girl gave it to her.
But a Russian girl?
Yes, Katrina Reiger. She was a kind of lady help, nurse companion to Miss Barraby. Fairly ordered about by her too, I gather. Fetch this, fetch that, fetch the other, rub me back, pour out me medicine, run round to the chemist, you know, all that sort of business. You know how it is with these old women. They mean to be kind, but what they need is a sort of black slave. Poirot smiled. And there you are, you see, continued Inspector Sims. It doesn't fit in what you might call nicely. Why should the girl poison her? Miss Barraby dies, and now the girl will be out of a job, and jobs aren't easy to find. She's not trained or anything.
Still, suggested Poirot, if the box of cachets was left about, anyone in the house might have the opportunity.
Well, naturally we're on to that, Monsieur Poirot. I don't mind telling you, we're making our inquiries quiet-like, if you understand me. Such as when the prescription was last made up, where it was usually kept. Patience and a lot of spade work. That's what'll do the trick in the end. And then there's Miss Barraby's solicitor. I'm having an interview with him tomorrow. And the bank manager. There's a lot to be done still.
Poirot rose. A little favour, Inspector Sims. You will send me a little word how the affair matches. I would esteem it a great favour. Here is my telephone number.
Well, why, certainly, Monsieur Poirot. Two heads are better than one. And besides, you ought to be in on this, having had that letter and all.
You are too amiable, Inspector.
Politely, Poirot shook hands and took his leave. He was called to the telephone on the following afternoon. Is that Monsieur Poirot? Inspector Sims here. Things are beginning to sit up and look pretty in that little matter you and I know of.
In verity? Tell me, I pray of you.
Well, here's item number one, and a pretty big item. Miss B left a small legacy to her niece and everything else to K. In consideration of her great kindness and attention, that's the way it was put, that alters the complexion of things. A picture rose swiftly in Poirot's mind. Sullen face and a passionate voice saying,
The money is mine. She wrote it down, and so it shall be.
The legacy would not come as a surprise to Katrina.
She knew about it beforehand.
Item number two, continued the voice of Inspector Sims,
nobody but Kay handled that cachet.
You can be sure of that?
Well, the girl herself doesn't deny it. What do you think of that?
Extremely interesting.
We only want one thing more, evidence of how the strychnine came into her possession. Well, that oughtn't to be difficult.
And the young lady, Kay?
I'm detaining her on suspicion. Don't want to run any risks. She might have some funny friends in the country who'd try to get her out of it.
No, said Poirot. I do not think she has any friends.
Oh, really? What makes you say that, Monsieur Poirot?
It is just an idea of mine. There were no other items, as you call them?
No, nothing that's strictly relevant. Miss B seems to have been monkeying about a bit with her shares lately. Must have dropped quite a tidy sum. It's rather a funny business one way and another, but I don't see how it affects the main issue. Well, not at present, that is.
No, perhaps you are right.
Well, my best thanks to you. It was most amiable of you to ring me up. Oh, not at all. I'm a man of my word. I could see you were interested. Who knows? You may be able to give me a helping hand before the end.
Oh, that would give me great pleasure. It might help you, for instance, if I could lay my hand on a friend of the girl Katrina.
Well, I thought you said she hadn't got any friends, said Inspector Sim, surprised.
I was wrong, said Hercule Poirot. She has one.
Before the inspector could ask a further question, Poirot had rung off. With a serious face, he wandered into the room where Miss Lemon sat at her typewriter. She raised her hands from the keys at her employer's approach and looked at him inquiringly.
I want you, said Poirot, to figure to yourself a little history.
Miss Lemon dropped her hands into her lap in a resigned manner. She enjoyed typing, paying bills, filing papers, and entering up engagements. To be asked to imagine herself in hypothetical situations bored her very much, but she accepted it as a disagreeable part of duty.
You are a Russian girl, began Poirot.
Yes,
said Miss Lemon, looking intensely British.
You are alone and friendless in this country. You have reasons for not wishing to return to Russia. You are employed as a kind of drudge, nurse attendant, and companion to an old lady. You are meek and uncomplaining.
Yes,
said Miss Lemon obediently, but entirely failing to see herself being meek to any old lady under the sun.
The old lady takes a fancy to you. She decides to leave her money to you. She tells you so.
Poirot paused. Miss Lemon said,
yes,
again.
And then the old lady finds out something. Perhaps it is a matter of money. She may find that you have not been honest with her. Or it might be more grave still, a medicine that tasted different, some food that disagreed. Anyway, she begins to suspect you of something, and she writes to a very famous detective, me. I am to call upon her shortly. And then, as you say, the dripping will be in the fire. The great thing is to act quickly. And so, before the great detective arrives, the old lady is dead, and the money comes to you. Tell me, does that seem to you reasonable?
Quite reasonable, said Miss Lemon. Quite reasonable for a Russian, that is. Personally, I should never take a post as a companion. I like my duties clearly defined, and of course, I should not dream of murdering anyone. Poirot sighed.
Oh, how I miss my friend Hastings. He had such an imagination, such a romantic mind. It is true that he always imagined wrong, but that in itself was a guide.
The telephone rang, and Miss Lemon went out of the room to answer it. She came back to say, it's Inspector Sims again. Poirot hurried to the instrument. Hello? Hello?
What is that you say?
Sims repeated his statement. We found a packet of strychnine in the girl's bedroom, tucked underneath the mattress. The sergeant's just come in with the news. That about clinches it, I think.
Yes, said Poirot. I think that clinches it.
His voice had changed. It rang with sudden confidence. When he had rung off, he sat down at his writing table and arranged the objects on it in a mechanical manner. He murmured to himself,
there was something wrong. I felt it. No, not felt. It must have been something I saw. En avant the little grey cells. Ponder. Reflect. Was everything logical and in order? The girl. Her anxiety about her money. Madame de la Fontaine. Her husband.
His suggestion of Russians. Imbecile, huh? But he is an imbecile. The room. The garden. Ah! Yes! The garden!
He sat up very stiff. The green light shone in his eyes. He sprang up and went into the adjoining room.
Miss Lemon, will you have the kindness to leave what you are doing and make an investigation for me?
An investigation, Monsieur Poirot? Well, I'm afraid I'm not very good.
Poirot interrupted her.
You said one day that you knew all about tradesmen.
Well, certainly I do, said Miss Lemon with confidence.
Then the matter is simple. You are to go to Charman's Green, and you are to discover a fishmonger.
A fishmonger? Asked Miss Lemon, surprised.
Precisely. The fishmonger who supplied Rosebank with fish. When you have found him, you will ask him a certain question.
He handed her a slip of paper. Miss Lemon took it, noted its contents without interest, then nodded and slipped the lid on her typewriter.
We will go to Charman's Green together, said Poirot. You go to the fishmonger, and I to the police station. It will take us but half an hour from Baker Street.
On arrival at his destination, he was greeted by the surprised Inspector Sims.
Well, this is quick work, Monsieur Poirot. I was talking to you on the phone only an hour ago.
I have a request to make to you, that you allow me to see this girl, Katrina... what is her name?
Katrina Reiger? Well, I don't suppose there's any objection to that.
The girl, Katrina, looked even more sallow and sullen than ever. Poirot spoke to her very gently.
Mademoiselle? I want you to believe that I am not your enemy. I want you to tell me the truth.
Her eyes snapped defiantly.
I have told you the truth. To everyone I have told the truth. If the old lady was poisoned, it was not I who poisoned her. It is all a mistake. You wish to prevent me having the money.
Her voice was rasping. She looked, he thought, like a miserable little cornered rat.
Tell me about this cachet, mademoiselle.
Monsieur Poirot went on.
Did no one handle it but you?
I have said so, have I not? They were made up at the chemist's that afternoon. I brought them back with me in a bag. That was just before supper. I opened the box and gave Miss Barrowby one with a glass of water.
No one touched them but you?
No.
A cornered rat with courage.
And Miss Barrowby had for supper only what we have been told? The soup, the fish pie, the tart?
Yes.
A hopeless yes. Dark, smouldering eyes that saw no light anywhere. Poirot patted her shoulder.
Be of good courage, mademoiselle. There may yet be freedom. Yes, and money. A life of ease.
She looked at him suspiciously. As he went out, Sims said to him, I don't quite get what you said through the telephone. Something about the girl having a friend.
She has one. Me,
said Hercule Poirot, and had left the police station before the inspector could pull his wits together. At the Green Cat tea rooms, Miss Lemon did not keep her employer waiting. She went straight to the point. The man's name is Rudge, in the High Street, and you were quite right. A dozen and a half, exactly. I've made a note of what he said. She handed it to him.
Ah!
It was a deep, rich sound, like a purr of a cat. Hercule Poirot betook himself to Rosebank. As he stood in the front garden, the sun setting behind him, Mary Delafontaine came out to him.
Monsieur Poirot?
Her voice sounded surprised. You've come back?
Yes, I have come back.
He paused and then said, When I first came here, madame, the children's nursery rhyme came into my head.
Mistress Mary, quite contrary, how does your garden grow? With cockle shells and silver bells and pretty maids all in a row. Only they are not cockle shells, are they, madame? They are oyster shells.
His hand pointed.
He heard her catch her breath and then stay. Very still.
Her eyes asked a question. He nodded.
Maybe, I know. The maid left her dinner ready. She will swear, and Katrina will swear that he's all you had.
Only you and your husband know that you brought back 12½ oysters. A little treat for la bonne tante. So easy to put a strychnine in an oyster, it is swallowed comme ça. But there remains the shells. They must not go in the bucket. The maid would see them, and so you thought of making an edging of them to a bed. But there were not enough. The edging is not complete. The effect is bad. It spoils the symmetry of the otherwise charming garden. Those few oyster shells struck an alien note. They displeased my eye on my first visit. Mary Delafontaine said, I suppose you guessed from the letter? I knew she had written, but I didn't know how much she had said. Poirot answered evasively, I knew at least that it was a family matter. If it had been a question of Katrina, there would have been no point in hushing things up. I understand that you or your husband handled Miss Barrowby's securities to your own profit, and that she found out.
Mary Delafontaine nodded.
We've done it for years, a little here and there. I never realized she was sharp enough to find out. And then I learned she had sent for a detective. And I found out, too, that she was leaving her money to Katrina.
That miserable little creature. And so the strychnine was put in Katrina's bedroom? I comprehend. You save yourself and your husband from what I may discover, and you saddle an innocent child with murder. Had you no pity, madame?
Mary Delafontaine shrugged her shoulders. Her blue forget-me-not eyes looked into Poirot's.
He remembered the perfection of her acting the first day he had come and the bungling attempts of her husband. A woman above the average, but inhuman. She said,
Pity? For that miserable, intriguing little rat?
Her contempt rang out. Hercule Poirot said,